there. It is about inflation. It's the state of the universe and string theory cosmology, right? And, right, you read this. When we go to the universe, things became simple. And this is why, and if we don't use, when we use the standard model alone, we have problems, and those problems resolve with inflation. The prices, we speculate that there is a scalar field which plays the leading role, and we need to resolve the problems this stage when the universe is exponentially expanding, then everything is good with causality. And to have inflation, we need a specific equation of state. When pressure is equal minus energy density. And the candidate is a scalar field. Now, a question to you. So imagine you have for 3 plus 1 dimensions, whatever what you want. You may have condensate of the scalar field. You may have a condensate of the gauge fields, like the homogeneous magnetic field or the Ford fields. Is it possible to have equation of state P is equal minus epsilon to realize with anything but the scalar field? So I'm making a conjecture that this is only scalar field which allows us to have isotropic expansion with this equation of state.
What about QCD condensates?
It's the same, effectively the same.
Well,
right, so,
right. But there are no fundamental scalars.
So. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So I can play with the vacuum polarization, R square or whatever, and it gives me effectively scalar field, the conformal transformation, which doesn't make the same. So, do you aware of any theorem which says it's only scalar field? So what I know, if I'm playing with magnitude, if I have electric field or magnetic field, and they are condensate, then it's possible to show that there is always a wild tensor, non-zero wild tensor, and the Einstein equations give solutions which are very twisted solutions. So there is no way to make it isotropic. Always will be an isotropic portion. But is it enough to make it as a theory? Anyone aware of it?
Well, okay, you mentioned R squared. So if I don't do Ricci scalar squared, but if I did Riemann tensor squared, that would be complicated enough that I couldn't transform it to a scalar tensor theory. But it would also have solutions that were desiderally.
Yes, yes.
And it may be that they're not stable or something, but I don't think.
But they are not scalar fields. They're not scalar fields.
It would just, yeah, I mean, I would just write it.
So what you're saying, if we're working with the higher order gravity,
right,
we have our order Grandin in the form of this, and there is only one combination. Another one is
you play the Gauss.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a coefficient here and here. So what you're saying, from this term, from Einstein equations, you have a rich structure. Only part of the solution will be homogeneous as a term,
right.
Part of not.
But I guess the same is true for a scalar field. But
no.
There's no hierarchy, or it gets washed out.
So I'm talking about this equation of state, P is equal minus epsilon equation of state. This is for sure with a scalar field. This is for sure with this term and even with this term. But nothing else. The form field will not give me anything like that. As I said, I know examples of electrodynamics. Anyway, it's a fun thing to play with, and there is no rigorous result.
So scalar field reformulation is more complicated.
You have scalar field reformulation of this.
Yeah, but the other one.
But not with this one, not.
Okay, so.
It is not.
And the answer is I don't know.
But I think the form fields, they satisfy the strong energy condition. So that's why you don't have the equation of state.
Probably.
That's what happens in string theory. All the forms satisfy the strong energy condition.
So if you play this four plus six dimensions and allow anisotropy in 10-dimensional space, then probably there is more possibilities.
Okay.
However, four-dimensional pieces look like effective scalars or something like that. But it's a little interesting exercise to make it more rigorous. So anyway, with the scalar fields and the plenty of scalar fields theory, when you talk to astronomers, this is most stumbling viewgraph. Because astronomers cannot digest what this. Do you have astronomers in the audience? Astronomers cannot take, they don't understand what the scalar field is. So and the closest example is the Schrödinger equation, non relativistic electron is the scalar field. So anyway, this is how we make it. How generic is the equation resolution? Let me not specify the potential, let me just say that locally we have a scalar field which is small, which has small gradients at pressure energy density expressed like that, and we have equation, oscillator-like equation for scalar field itself, and also Einstein equation for Hubble parameter. And this system of equations is nonlinear, can be reduced to equation for the scalar field, so we can express Hubble's rule, kinetic term and potential term. And solutions are, where are my solutions? I lost my solution. Oh no. I also have it. So I wanted to show you the phase diagram. Right, so the solution of those equations can be all presented on the phase diagram, and they're all solutions, each to that red and green, red and blue, don't pay attention to red. This is what happens if you add a little bit of radiation, it's not essential. So bottom line is that we start everywhere in this phase portrait, and the phase trajectories are not intersecting, and we are moving, and inevitably we reach this separatrix. There are special points at infinities, and there is no way to avoid separatrixes. They are imprinted in the equations. And along the separatrix, scalar field is moving slowly, and this is where inflation takes place. So kinetic term is small, and potential term dominate, and pressure is equal minus energy density, and the inflation is realized. And if we change the shape of the potential, we change the tail, but topology of the phase portrait stays the same. And I like this very much because it shows how inevitable inflation is. You can play with potential, you can take potential with two minima. This structure around these faults can be split in two, but far away we'll have the same story. And you can play with grains, equations with grains, a little bit different, but again, the phase portrait will topologically have a very similar structure. And this is to say that there is always separatrix and inflation is inevitable as solution. And right. Somehow, this portion was discovered relatively late when models of inflation, like the new inflation, was constructed. This is much more generic and more interesting. And we call this type as chaotic inflation, and this is to say if we have the region of the potential which is not bounded by the value of the scalar field, we always can put our initial conditions over there, just to roll from there, from there, and we are going to the inflation regime, and with the scalar field it's easy to realize. Okay.
If you introduce inhomogeneity to the scalar field,
right,
is that stable in some sense?
Yes and no. If I introduce inhomogeneities at the stage far away from, then I will not move classical, my quantum jumps will be big enough, and I will spend a lot of time along those trajectories. And some portions, sooner or later, will be in the regime when quantum fluctuations are smaller, and they begin to move. So literally, this phase diagram is limited by the regime when quantum fluctuations are small. So if quantum fluctuations are small, this is description of the background, but not description of fluctuations. Right. So. Right. Now, when we are close to the minimum of the potential, scalar field oscillates, and then in terms of the space portrait, it corresponds to spiraling of trajectories around the minimum. And inflation ends, and equation of state now, kinetic terms are big, it ceases to be P is equal to minus epsilon, and we are not anymore inflating, we are in the universe, which is look like oscillation of the scalar field. And we have to transfer the energy of oscillating scalar field into the energy of plasma of elementary particles to begin the plot history of the universe. And this portion is known as the particle genesis and origin of matter. And the first portion of my discussion will be about what is the status, what is interesting going on in this year of free heating and inflation. So let me remind you that during inflation, everything is very cold, and there is no entropy, no particle. This is because particles are diluted by enormous expansion, and temperature in expanding universe is decreasing. And because we're exponentially expanding, the temperature practically decreases to zero, the same as entropy. So it's a very, very boring place. There is no particles. And all the particles are coming from interaction of the inflaton field with the other particles. And so we have to write down the Lagrangian, and you already saw my Lagrangian, so this is my favorite Lagrangian. And so we have to pick up the fields. Actually, we have to work to find what is the leading channel of inflaton decay. So because inflaton first will decay in one or two or three fields, and the vacuum of all of the fields will be eventually excited, and they will be settled in thermal equilibrium, and we have the temperature, the highest temperature of the primordial plasma, which will be then slightly decreasing as the universe expands. But the hope is that this process of transition will be will have some traces, will give us something interesting for subsequent evolution. So if we have a thermal equilibrium all the time, after the particles are created in an equilibrium, it will be a very, very boring universe. And all information about the universe, interesting things, coming from very short epochs of out of equilibrium. For instance, cold dark matter particles, which dominates the matter sector of the universe today, we think they are relics which came out from the very short epoch of freezing out of this hot, of this cold dark matter particles. The cosmic microwave background radiation is the same. It's a non-equilibrium stage of recombination when plasma was cooling down and photons became transparent. Baryon asymmetry. So all of those non-trivial things, they happened because of the short epochs of out-of-equilibrium stages. And this is why in cosmology we are very keen about non-equilibrium, short non-equilibrium stages. And they're always good candidates to have some remnants, dark matter candidates or baryogenesis, etc. Okay? And this is also a fun thing because we create particles from oscillating scalar field. And this is an application of the quantum field theory of particle creation from vacuum. And it's one of the most spectacular applications because all the matter of the universe is created in this process. So quantum theory of particle creation is not a correction to something. It's a leading effect, right? And it's, you know, we know the quantum operation of black holes. Astrophysically, it's a very small effect. It's a big thing for theoretical physics. But here, it's particle creation is a very big thing. Everything is created like that. So the theory of particle creations, it's a chapter of quantum field theory, and the famous example is a Schrödinger formula for creation of electron-positron pair from a classical electric field. And I just briefly showed how to derive this in one view graph. To avoid working with the Dirac equation, let's work with the scalar vector dynamics and the scalar particles, charged particles chi, which is a complex field, will obey this equation. The log derivative contains a four vector of electric field. And if our electric field is a constant, very strong and constant in space, its vector potential is not constant. And this is a secret. So we can play with different gauge. And most interesting gauge is such that vector potential is actually a linear function of time. And as a result, we are considering quantum fluctuations of this field chi, charge field chi. And the quantum fluctuations are described with the usual quantization. They're described by Fourier modes, the homogeneous waves, and most interesting part is time-dependent part of this field, this function. It obeys the oscillator-like equation. And because, so despite electric field is constant, is four vector potential is not. And therefore, the time dependence of the effective frequency appears here. And this time, which I introduce here, is a rescaled time, which takes into account the charge of the particles in the electric field itself. And to answer the question, how many particles are created, we have to solve this equation. So what you can say about it? So tau is equal to zero is a special model, because for very large tau, negative or positive, this is a big term, and frequency is big, and it's hard to excite this frequency. But when tau is close to zero, this frequency is at its smallest magnitude, and therefore, at this moment, we can excite this frequency. And the solution of this equation can be written analytically, and we can calculate the Bogoliubov coefficients. So what happens, you send wave, which initially contains only a positive frequency solution, and after rescattering at this potential, you will have negative and positive frequency solutions. And you give them coefficients alpha and beta, which are Bogoliubov coefficients, which say beta coefficient will be in the front of negative frequency, and it says how many particles are created. And the square of this Bogoliubov coefficient gives number of particles, and exponential, I'm afraid this minus, I missed this minus sign. And this nice result, because it's not analytical result. You can derive this result from perturbative calculations. So because if you put your the strength of your field to zero, this will be non-analytical expression. So this is to say that the particle creations always occur in non-perturbative regime. OK, so when we're doing particle creation from inflaton fields, we have our inflaton field phi here, which is interacting with the field chi, and my field chi is not charged anymore. That was just an example showing how particles are created from constant electric field. Now I'm working with an oscillating scalar field. So what we have in the universe, homogeneous scalar field oscillating and interacts with some the vacuum of other particles. For simplicity, I take scalar field. And we have to introduce interaction. An interaction is the simplest one, is a four-legs interaction, g squared, phi squared, chi squared. And we have to write down the equation for the mode functions. Very similar how I did it for the Schrödinger formula, for pair creation, creation from constant electric field. So an equation which we'll get will be this type of equation. I redefine my time the same manner I did it for electric field. And the slight difference is here, I will have the function oscillating with time. This is a reflection of the fact that my scalar field is oscillating many, many, many times. And pay attention that around zero of each oscillation, right, the close to the moment when the scalar field crosses zero,
my sine square goes to tau square. And we go back to the same equations we have for the Schwinger formula. The only difference here, we will have repetition of this process many times. And as a result, we can calculate number of particles again, coefficients. So this is the formula, the number of particles after the field crosses zero j plus one time will be given by the first term, e to the minus 5k squared, plus other terms, which contains the number of particles which existed before them. Okay? And the first term is nothing but the Schwinger result. We go back to electrostatic case. And the rest terms are a reflection of the fact that now particles are created not from the vacuum state, but from the state which were created before. And to find what is the total number of particles, we have to repeat this operation from g is equal to 0 to 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. We collect all together, and the result will be that the number of particles is just increasing exponentially, and we have a parametric amplification effect. We have a creation of particles in the regime of parametric resonance. And instead of showing formulas, I just show you what is going on with the realistic case when we have expanding universe. This is a total picture. So my universe is expanding. My equation in the expanding universe is more complicated than a simple equation with a sine tau square. And number of particles, logarithm of number of particles as a function of time, is actually not monotonically increasing function, but the function which has a stochastic behavior. And this is a reflection of the fact that we have parametric resonance, and number of particles can, the same mode can go through the stability or instability band, but more often goes through stability bands. And very soon, energy, because this number of particles exponentially increasing, goes through this chi field, and chi field now begin to produce back reaction to the inflaton itself. It trains in homogeneity to the inflaton. And as a result, over there, what is shown, the number of particles, this is time, in chi field, blue line, and in the inflaton in homogeneity, red line. So interestingly, inflaton in homogeneities, they also start to be generated. They are just waves of inflaton in homogeneities, and they are generated very, very quickly with a double exponent relative to the chi field. And eventually everything is saturated and goes in the regime where we have some dynamics towards equilibrium. So number of particles chi, they're produced by resonance, and later at this point they have this shape, and as time goes, this shape goes further into infrared modes. And this is an interesting thing. This shows the level of exponent of this dynamical system, that at some moment the system became irreversible, and we have a chaos of the chaotical turbulence of the scalar modes interacting with each other with a very high occupation number. Again, instead of showing those graphs, let me show you a movie, how it looks like. And this is a new result, which you may not see. So we can do analytical theory when fluctuations are linear. It's very difficult to do when they are nonlinear. And when we have a turbulence, again, we can do some analytics with this kinetic theory. Works pretty complicated. But the best thing is to put things in the lattice simulation of the scalar field dynamics. So we take three-dimensional lattice. We solve a dynamical equation for the classical scalar field phi and for the classical field chi. Because initially our chi field is a quantum field. It's described by the Gaussian random field with very small amplitude. But very quickly it's amplified and the occupation numbers are large, and we can describe it as a classical waves. And so we can describe this as a box chi, the wave equation for the chi field interacting with the phi field. And so we have a system of two coupled nonlinear scalar fields. And numerically, we can solve this. And what you will see here, there will be box of the simulation. One slice is shown. We can do it in every slice. So one slice is shown, which shows amplitude of the scalar field. And initially, you will see oscillation of this scalar field as a reflection of the background oscillations. Phi naught is in this component. And on the top of that, you will see generation of inhomogeneities of inflaton field. This is the back reaction of the parametric resonance working of this field. Here, you will see the box which shows how chi field is evolving. It's initially a random Gaussian field, but because of amplification, it's increasing, its amplitude is increasing with time. And what happens afterwards, only the computer can show. Okay, let's see.
Before you do it, can you say again what finot is? I thought it was just a number, because you used it sort of to characterize the strength of the transition on the last two transparencies.
Finot?
Yeah.
You're right. So you're right. There is a finot is amplitude. What I mean here is a time-dependent portion. But it's irrelevant. So just cross mentally cross this. You don't need this. It's time.
Finot would characterize the initial amplitude. Is that what on the other.
The initial amplitude. Everything will be in units of initial amplitude. So what I meant to write here is it's a background evolution plus inhomogeneities. They're not small inhomogeneities. So a better notation would be phi bar, which shows background initial, not initial, just background homogeneous comfort. Okay, so this is oscillations. So this is time running in, this is a time running. So oscillations. So this is the Gaussian field amplitude is growing, it became very large. The back reaction producing those things. And pay attention that they are well defined structures. They look like a bubbles which are expanding and collapsing. And within several oscillations, those bubbles expanding superpose on top of each other. And we have a complete mess. It's a turbulence of the scalar waves going to each other, they are fragmenting and cascading in the phase space occurs. And this system now will go towards thermal equilibrium. Right? So the overall dynamics initially is mild. We just have random Gaussian field with increasing amplitude. And at some moment, back reaction looks like those features in the Gaussian field, the peaks, negative and positive, will generate features in the field phi. In those features, for a while, stay and define the dynamics. And those features will have gradients. They look like peaks of the Gaussian fields with nonlinearities forming around them. And they are expanding and not waiting till the dynamic between them is settled. And they define this transition. So the fault transition looks like the linear stage, the bubbly stage, and turbulent stage. And I would like to stress that there is this bubble stage, which we found only recently. And this may have interesting consequences observationally. Besides of coordinate inflation, there is a hyperinflation. Everyone knows what it is. It's two fields working, and we have one direction when along this direction, chaotic inflation can realize. This phase portrait I was thinking about takes place for this direction. But at the end of inflation, we may have bifurcation, and the field may go, the field will go over the minimum, the structure around the minimum is more complicated. And my universe is going here, and oscillation can take place over there. And now I will show you how the field is fragmented in this theory. And what we will see is very similar to what we saw in chaotic scenario. And I will show the movie for a specific case when two fields can be combined with variables around this direction, and we can operate only with single field, which is self-interacting. And this is a movie. So my field is moving from the top toward this trench. It's a random Gaussian field, the peaks of the random Gaussian field. Very quickly, because of nonlinearity, it's going to the minimum. They reach first minimum, and forming bubbles starts to expand. And before the rest of the space, the scalar field is still tracing over there. And those bubbles are colliding and producing interesting things. This is a snapshot of time what is going on. It's around the top of the potential, and around the Gaussian field. Because of nonlinearities, the peak of the Gaussian field starts to rush towards the minimum. They reach the minimum. It's only like structure due to the oscillation around the minimum of those regions. And the large gradients are forming around those peaks, and the fields in between is still close to the top of the potential. And those bubbles are expanding and colliding and going through, and this turbulence is established. And this is how it looks in terms of number of particles. Interesting thing is this Gaussianity. So we have Gaussianity, this is time. The first 100 oscillations is here. It's a Gaussian, it's this Gaussianity. After turbulence is settled, it's again Gaussian. And in between, it's very non-Gaussian. This bubble structure dominates the picture. Okay? So the bottom line is the transition from inflation to the turbulent stage, when we can talk about equilibrium, occurs through the violent stage, when inhomogeneities are large and dynamics is nonlinear, and it's short and non-trivial. And the question is, can we say something about this stage, or it will be lost in history? Because eventually there will be turbulence. Gravity waves. When we have something big colliding, we expect gravity waves are produced. And so we have those inhomogeneities, they're well inside the size of the horizon. So the box simulation, the size of the box is about 20 times smaller than the horizon size at this moment. So the size of the bubbles will be about 30 times smaller than the size of the horizon, right? But the inhomogeneities, energy inhomogeneities, order of unity at this scale. You saw those bubbles there, pretty big. And we can calculate what is the fraction of energy which goes into the gravitational waves. And what we want to know about gravity waves? We want to know amplitudes or fraction of energy which goes into gravity waves. And we want to know the wavelengths, what kind of gravity waves are there. Very important thing, there are not gravity waves which are produced from inflation. They are not. It's a different animals. There is always gravitational waves which are produced from inflation and sent outside of the horizon, waiting into the horizon at the moment of recombination and contributes to CMB anisotropy, right? Those are very large wavelength gravity waves. Here we are talking about wavelengths of much shorter scales. And the scale of gravity waves, the frequency, depends on the scale of inflation. If we're dealing with inflation of the scale M, 10 to the 15 GeV, it's a gut scale inflation, right? The gravity waves will be 10 to the 8 Hertz. This number tells you nothing. The next view graph will bring you back to the ground why we are interested in this number. But if we're dealing with much lower inflation, and it's there is no constraint on the inflationary scale. It can be as low as 1 GeV, because proton is 1 GeV, and I want to make protons before. Maybe Rosbeck allows me to go even further to the, the cosmology is constrained from the nucleosynthesis.
Where would you get variance if it's 1 GeV?
1 GeV? I don't know. We are very,
apart from this,
we are creative. People are creative. 10 GeV. You're happy?
Yeah.
Good. 10 GeV. Right. So in other words, it's a wide open number, right? This is the point. And we want to see the window to check. This is an important thing. And it turns out that the fraction of energy which goes in gravity waves is very big. It's about 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4 of fraction of energy of radiation at this moment, okay? And radiation today constitutes 10 to the minus 5 in total omega in energy density of the universe. This is to say that the fraction of energy in gravitational waves generated from this process will be at the level of 10 to the minus 8, 10 to the minus 9 of the total density, critical density today. And it's very nice, the estimation goes, R is the size of the bubbles. H is the Hubble at this moment. So it's a combination, it's a ratio between size of those bubbles and size of the Hubble patch. And you can understand it in the following way. If the bubbles I'm talking about would be the size of the horizon, the black hole would fall, okay? Because it's a homogeneity in density order of unity. And if I have two black holes which are colliding, the efficiency of the ground wave generation is order of unity. So the fraction of energy which goes into gravity wave from black hole collision, the same order of magnitude as the gravity of the black hole energy. So, and here, it will be a fraction of deficit relatively to the black hole of this problem. You can understand this way.
Sort of when you quote the fraction that goes into the gravity waves, that's for the lower low scale inflation. So that's
No, it doesn't depend on the inflation at all. No.
So that's a generic number?
It's a generic number. So yeah. Claim, if you have those bubbles, this is fraction of energy, a generic number.
But it depends on age, right?
Depends on age. Correct.
But, yeah.
But depends on age. What I'm saying is, you end in inflation,
yes.
And you're scaling everything with the scale of inflation. Age is there. Yes. Now my bubbles are forming. And the bubbles also, the size of the bubbles, they also scale with inflation.
Oh.
In Platon mask like there, or you have an inflation. Right. So they are independent numbers. Okay? And when we now we have lattice simulations, we can calculate gravity waves from lattice simulation. This is the answer, how the spectrum looks like, and this peak corresponds exactly to this number. So from lattice simulation, for different models, we have different plots. So this portion, the most of the gravity waves are produced exactly in bubbles. Right? Okay, observations. This is a frequency, and this is Liga scale of frequencies. This is Liga scale of frequencies. They are not observed, they are with ground-based gravitational waves antenna. People will send them in space with satellites. That will be 25 years from now. So remember, we now are proving what people were fantasizing about inflation in 1980, 25 years ago. So believe me, 25 years from now, we'll talk about gravity wave detection and all of those integrated details, right? So it's a right time to work on gravity wave generation from the universe. Anyway, there is another type of experiment, Big Bang Observatory, even more hypothetical, but let's take those numbers. So the fraction of energy omega in gravity waves, which will be measured by ELISA, 10 to the minus 12. And the fraction of energy which is generated by preheating is 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 10. It's much bigger. So the rest is just to shift this. This is for chaotic inflation. For chaotic inflation, we have energy scale 10 to 15 GeV scale of inflation. It will be two short wavelengths of gravity waves. But if when we're dealing with a hybrid inflation, we have more scale to play with, and low energy inflation allows us to move over here. And we are well in the range which is testable in principle. So in other words, what I'm trying to say, with experiments like LISA and BBO, we will be capable to test direct production of gravity waves from preheating for the hybrid inflation or excluded. And the amplitude, as I said, is very significant. I was very much surprised. It's a big effect. It's not a small effect. But there is another very interesting effect which goes beyond preheating itself. When we are moving towards equilibrium, we have this stage of thermalization. And even if we have thermalization, we have thermal fluctuations. And even if we don't have scalar field, but we have a quark gluon plasma, we have a quark gluon plasma with thermal fluctuations. And we shall expect a generation of gravity waves from this regime. And to my surprise, I'm not aware anyone considers this problem. And this is a very interesting problem because, as I said, we have significant span, the range. It still can be detectable. And what we're talking about here is so bubbles produce the biggest effect, but it may be well shifted in terms of frequency. But there should be a tail which is coming from the long epoch of thermalization, or even if they have already thermalization, from the long epoch of the thermal history of particular plasma of the universe. And it's very interesting to see how this tail goes. What is the slope of this tail? This is what I just draw. It's my fantasy. And it's a great problem to solve.
So if you ask the total energy in the gravity waves at the time when you produce synthesis?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's a couple of orders of magnitude. We know. So what Justin is talking about, if you produce too many gravity waves, they are sitting in the universe as a radiation. And at the moment of nuclear synthesis, we know, we're counting every contribution to the radiation. If there is more species, expansion will be faster, and output of nuclear synthesis will be different. Therefore, they are constrained on the residual radiation. And it cannot be bigger than several percent. So it's fine.
Of course, it's fine, because even if it thermalizes gravity waves with the rest of matter at, say, very high temperature, later on it decouples, right? And the rest of matter fields will go to the photons, right? So
you have to watch how much gravity waves you have as a gravity wave radiation.
By accounting more than radiation and the fall, right?
Well,
if
it's 10 to minus 3, it's a big problem.
If it's a number of gravitons, it's 10 to minus 3 relative to the number.
I'm sorry. If it's comparable, if it's 10%, it's already at the edge. If you have 10% in gravity waves at the moment of nuclear synthesis.
No, but it cannot be, that's what I'm saying, because it will be, suppose it's 1-to-1 at the high end, and later on all the quarks will talk quarks, W's will
absolutely
go into photons.
You
right?
You're absolutely right. If original gravity waves, the rest of the matter, is thermal. But if it's not thermal, we can have mechanisms to reduce gravity.
So you think I could be dominant over the radiation and so on and so on.
That's right. And there are examples. For instance, if those bubbles that produce gravity waves and they're not thermal, it's much more bigger than if you expect them to be produced thermal.
So your expansion, if everything thermalizes, then will be driven by the gravity waves, right? The radiation, the energy density of the gravity waves.
No. What I'm saying is the origin is not thermal.
Sure, but then there cannot be more energy in this than in the radiation, right?
Yes. This test is passed.
Sure. I'm saying that it's not a big deal, this test, that's all.
Well, to me it's a very big deal if we will observe gravity waves at the scale of LISA.
I agree that it would be a big deal, but what I'm saying is the nuclear synthesis is not a big stringent test.
Yes, that's right. You understand each other? Right. So, it's a great subject, and
better is done. You can draw on that graph and say nucleosynthesis says it has to be below here.
I have somewhere in this graph. It's fast.
Sorry, just one main question. So the dark thick line there, is that the primordial?
That's going first. Right. Okay, the first message is gravity waves is an interesting test. Let me go through others. So I will not talk about string preheating.
Before you go, Jeff, can I ask you? So you have the inflaton, we don't know the true origin, and you have this sky field, which we don't know its origin either. Mm-hmm. Can you sort of minimize this schema and say use the Higgs for the sky field?
Yeah.
Is it possible?
Sure. So when people are considering rapid inflation, the sky field is Higgs. So, and people trying to use SO10 model to find Bose fields, inflaton field, and Higgs. This SO10 is pretty successful to mimic hybrid inflation. Right, so I was talking about those.
It's a Higgs, so, I mean, isn't the system going to start to feed into all sorts of other stuff? square root, or is the scale?
You mean other things?
Yeah, like tops or.
Yeah, yeah, but the timing. So what happens here, it's an enormously quick process.
Okay.
We're dealing here with a time, the inflaton oscillation, 10 to the minus 37 seconds. And parametric resonance allows it to finish in a couple of dozen oscillations. It's much, much faster than anything else is excited. So the bosonic sector is leading. And the fermionic sector is non-trivial, non-perturbative also, but because of the Pauli exclusion principle, it's much slower. So things first happen in bosonic sectors. This is why the potential state is. Okay, this is about reheating. I keep reheating in string theory. We'll get privately. I want to go quickly in about 10 minutes, right? Right, so I will talk about project doing with Dick Bond and Pascal Van Drewange and Carlo Cantaldi. It's about fluctuations from inflation. So we consider the creation of particles after inflation from vacuum fluctuations. So what happens during inflation? It's the same story. Let's take a test scalar field, chi. And this scalar field will have quantum fluctuations, which are described again in quantum field theory. And this field, let's suppose it's not interacting with the inflaton at the moment. Just it's a light field. Light means that its mass is less than the Hubble parameter during inflation. The Hubble parameter during inflation, depending on the model, 10 to 13 GeV or lower. So if your field is 100 GeV, you think it's the light field. Okay. And so you consider the weight equation for this light field in the seated background. And the solution is presented at this plot. It's a time. And if you feel massive, it oscillates and dumps, and this is what happens. That's interesting. But if your field is quantum, this is what happens with the field. It oscillates, then throws out, and stays with amplitude, which is given by the Hubble parameter. And the spectrum of this field is such that amplitude at each mode is the same. And we say it's a scale-free spectrum. Okay? So, and simultaneously what happens with this field? This field has a momentum. And this momentum is redshift in the expanding universe. And because expansion is exponentially fast, this redshifting is very fast. And if you initially consider the wavelengths well inside the horizon, it will be stretched quickly. And when it's stretched, it stays outside. It doesn't want to oscillate. And I like the following example. Imagine you have a piano. And your piano has strings. And your piano is conformal. This is to say that it's expanding together with the universe. Okay. And initially, when your piano is well inside the horizon, the strings obey the oscillator-like equations. They vibrate because of the vacuum fluctuations. But as soon as your piano exceeds the size of the horizon, your string will be silent. It freezes out. They're not oscillating anymore. And your piano will be outside of the horizon. And you're waiting when inflation ends, preheating begins, hot universe expands, the relationship between wavelengths and horizon has changed, and at some moment your piano enters the horizon again and starts to vibrate. Mm-hmm. Those vibrations are seen with the same wave fluctuations. Okay? So the physics of strings, piano strings, and the light scalar fields are absolutely identical. So bottom line is, this is how it looks like these strings in piano when piano goes outside of the horizon. They're frozen, and the fluctuations of the strings, which are coming and coming and coming outside, the form of superposition of the waves which are with the random phases, and looks like a random Gaussian field. And the size of the horizon is here, 1 centimeter, moving the size of the horizon at the end of inflation. And this is what happens with the strings of your piano. All right. And another picture is, so this is inflation. This is a slice of geometry. And this is the Hubble patch. and random Gaussian field of those fluctuations is here. And when strings are going inside the horizon, your piano starts to oscillate and this nice anisotropy pattern is formed. And so geometry is given by Friedman with perturbations. Perturbations can be related to the scalar field fluctuations. So here I was talking about generic scalar field. So we can, there are different mechanisms. The most economic mechanism, the inflaton scalar field itself is fluctuating. And a chi will be inflaton scalar field, and its fluctuations behave like that. And therefore, inflaton field will be homogeneous, and the top of that will be fluctuations. And we see it as in homogeneities, and homogeneities have a spectrum. And talk to observers. What do you tell the observers? You predict fluctuations. And these, you have fluctuations in the scalar field, metric fluctuations, the scalar component. It's in homogeneities, so geometry, then printed in CMB. And we can characterize it by amplitude, and we also can characterize it by spectrum. And because initially we always begin with the simple models, we say our spectrum will be scale-free or close to scale-free. It will be just index n, which is close to unity, to reflect the scale-free spectrum. Also, it will be scalar fluctuations of gravity waves. So as a, my light field chi here, I can consider gravitational waves fluctuations. And they will have a large wavelength because the stretch and center outside of the horizon and produce a flat spectrum. And this is the spectrum of the gravity waves. Again, we, there is an index of these gravity waves, and we can play with it. And this assumption that our spectrum is close to scale three is a very good assumption. This is VMAP3 result. VMAP3, and this is Boomerang 3. They're showing us three peaks. The VMAP3 shows three peaks of these acoustic oscillations. My piano goes inside the horizon, it has time to boom, 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 oscillate three times. This thing is VMAP. Boomerang OS3 together with polarization sees four peaks. And what I have here, if we combine all the data we have, CBI, cosmic background imager data, VMAP3, Boomerang experiment, we see five peaks of acoustic oscillations. And there is interesting counting how many peaks we see. So claim is today we see five peaks. Now, yes, the simple scale three model fits the data, but there is always error bars, and we are wondering how much room is there for different inflationary models. And the name of the game is from the data, try to reconstruct what kind of scalar field potentials, what kind of the inflationary models are working or not working. And this is a bottom-up approach. This is to say that we're stupid. The perimeter people are smart. They're going top-down. They're building up inflationary models, telling us what they observe. At CETA, we say, no, no. Look how many models. Right? So, and as time goes, we'll do more and more models. This is only a small fraction of inflationary models suggested in 25 years of inflationary existence. All possibilities were covered. And let's liberate ourselves with any friendships, right? So we don't believe in nations. We just say that in string theory there is a landscape, right? We can, this is a potential, we can go in any directions. So what we are saying is there are very, very different possibilities of inflation. And let's have them as an arbitrary functions. The scalar field potential will be arbitrary functions. So we can talk easier about scalar field potentials in different shapes. We can talk about Hubble parameter as a function of E folding, it's the same. So number of folding shows how many exponential expansion we have. So this is time. We know the Hubble parameter is decreasing. So this is inflation. So during inflation, Hubble parameter is increasing. and it may have features that we don't want to constrain ourselves, because each model over here has its own trajectory, and we would like to create an ensemble of trajectories and say, we're playing with this ensemble from the data, we can pinpoint which exactly trajectories are better fit to the data or worse fit to the data. So this game is known as a reconstruction of the potential or reconstruction of trajectories, and the people already were playing with it, and we're playing with it too. If we have a Hubble parameter function of number of folding, we can calculate the spectrum of scalar fluctuations. And remember, the number of folding running from something like 60 or so to zero, we observe today only about 10 folding. And our spectrum, when we say spectrum fits the data, CNB, is only over here. And we just only a very small portion can be observed, and we want to reconstruct everything. And so what technique to use for this? The technique which is already on the market is so-called the technique of slow roll parameters and Renoir group flow method. Did you hear anyone talking about this recently or months ago? How familiar you are with this?
People. No, Will Kinney, I think, talked about
it. Right.
Not exactly.
That's right. So, the idea is the following. Because we expect departure from the scale 3 spectrum is small, we can introduce slow roll parameters, which are the ratios of the derivative of the Hubble. In units of Hubble, they're dimensionless numbers smaller than unity. And we can express the spectral index for those slow roll parameters. And we can plot result the spectral index, this one, and a ratio of tensor to scalar modes over here. And also running of the spectral unit to the third dimension. And we can make statistics of models by numbers of the slow roll parameters changing along the trajectory. And just from definition of these slow roll parameters, you differentiate it and you truncate it somewhere. And this is not physical operations, purely mathematical operation. You generate set of equations along the trajectory. And this is a flow. And it's called Renoir group flow methods because some reminiscence of the Renoir group from two theory. It has nothing to do with Renoir group, it has nothing to do with physics, it's pure mathematics, just the way to produce ensemble, just the way to produce ensemble of trajectories. And with their methods, this is the points of the ensemble, and all we map data are here, and the initially people were saying, okay, you know, you miss a lot of, only few points are close to the data. With a newbie map, this is smaller, and this may be bigger, but it's still one way to do things. Our method is different, and we claim it's much better. And our method is the following. So the name of the game is to generate ensemble of inflationary trajectories, not to miss anything, to make it as homogeneous as possible. And we notice that we are dealing with the number of folding between 0 and something like 65. So the number of 65 depends on the model of inflation. But let's keep it just 65, more or less the same. And it doesn't matter. We just make it fixed. And if we have finite interval, and we define functions like the Hubble parameter at this interval, make this interval changing between minus 1 and plus 1, right? Just by shift of the argument. So what we're talking about? We're talking about generation of ensemble of function, f of x, changing between minus 1 and plus 1. And we know that the most economic way and fastest numerically is to use Chebyshev polynomials. The Chebyshev polynomials is a set of polynomials to represent function. They're much more successful than just Taylor expansion. and they give you homogeneous presentation of functions in some functionalist sense. So your function is decomposed into the Chebyshev polynomials, and Chebyshev polynomials, just to remind you, they define the interval between minus 1 and 1, and they're running between minus 1 and 1, and the first Chebyshev polynomial is constant, zero Chebyshev polynomial is constant, first is linear function, second is this, third is, the third one is this, etc., etc. So the higher order of the polynomial, the more zeros of the polynomial. And they converge very, very quickly. The exponentially quickly convergence, they agree. And now the functions, all the functions H ensemble, do be encoded in the numbers n. And if we say we wanted to see more details, we need higher and higher order, but it turns out that the order, well, first of all, to compare two methods, we take the same order of truncation here and there. And the answer I will show here, this is the answer for this R and S. This is Renard group methods, and this is Chebyshev polynomial methods, the same order. And this is CNB data. So first thing happens, with our method, we cover much bigger space of parameters.
So just a very naive question. So you are enforcing that the equation ends basically by...
Not necessarily. You can keep it, not necessarily. You can keep just some fixed number, 70 or 65, but it's not enforced. Not enforced. Just take, pick up the number you like.
But I mean, so maybe this is saying, so inflation occurs when H dot is small, so...
But
you look at trajectories, so
that's right. Absolutely. Inflation is ended when Hubble parameter became equal to its gradient. The same as with the non-group
method. Because I thought what they did is they don't impose that.
No, absolutely. They must impose that, otherwise the trajectory never ends. So the trajectory ends when epsilon is equal to 1. It's a generic thing. This is a method to generate trajectories. And I don't want to pick the RG methods, just to show the speed. We can take RG methods, transform them, and compare Chebyshev coefficients. And the RG will correspond to those interval. Just cover this interval as red, just to say that our ensemble is bigger by construction. It turns out that, again, when we're dealing only with two numbers, R and S, we're assuming that the spectrum is a power law. But the power law spectrum works only for given pivot point. So what I'm talking about, you have your function, your spectrum fluctuation. You mimic it with some power law. But this power law works when you take a certain pivot point around which you do your fitting. If you take different pivot point, your powers will be different. And if you take those trajectories now, I was talking about, and change pivot point, this is what happens with the numbers. They start to move. And it shows that this method of fitting with the power law formulas is handicapped. It's not good. It doesn't cover the many possibilities. And it's much better to do functions. And we're doing functions. And now we have ensemble of trajectories which are imprinted in Chebyshev coefficients, and we run Monte Carlo simulations. Different, our ensemble is the ensemble of the Chebyshev coefficients. We have observational data, which includes CNB and logical structure, and there are big packages which take the supercomputer at CETA, and from this Monte Carlo, you reconstruct the best fits in those Chebyshev polynomials, and you can see what is the best fit trajectories for our universe. This is the name of the game, just examples, right? But technically, it's much more interesting, because it turns out that, first of all, as an ensemble, we can use not only Hubble, but logarithm of Hubble, or acceleration parameter, or logarithm acceleration parameter. Even the functions itself, the spectral fluctuations, you can consider as a random functions, and decompose their interchange polynomials. And in fact, when people are using running, when people are saying, I'm using my functions as ans minus 1 plus running, ans. This is nothing but the decomposition of local power spectrum into Chebyshev polynomial of the second order. It's already done this way. And playing with this, let's keep technicalities and all of those. The final result will be here. So the interval, observable interval, over here, this is horizon of wavelengths. It turns out we using this the 10 so-called it corresponds to 10 polynomials. It's a lot for Monte Carlo. You have a usual Monte Carlo simulations which has all the cosmological parameters plus 10 other parameters. So usually people doing the base plus changing running index, spectral index or running index of gravity waves, but they're not doing it at the same time. There will be 3 parameters. We are doing 10 parameters. It's a big job. And surprisingly, what we find that the best fit model is pretty weird. The best fit model is the following. So this is one sigma around best fit model. The spectrum of the scalar fluctuations is this one, and this is a tensor model. So we find that the universe statistically likes to have suppression of the scalar modes at large scales, and this is about a few hundred megaparsecs scale. This is horizon scale, 12,000 megaparsecs, few hundred megaparsecs. And it wants to have large gravity waves at large scales and smaller gravity waves at smaller scales. And the total contribution to CMB anisotropy came from gravity waves and scalar waves. And if you have a deficit of the scalar waves, but excess of gravity waves, you still may have your delta two over T smooth and nice. Right? But it's a pretty weird model because it has large gravity waves.
You see, you're getting more gravity waves than scalars.
And we have more gravity waves at large scales than scalars. And it's that's
so
what
epsilon is very is larger, much larger than one.
No, it's not larger than one. It's not larger than one. Epsilon, I have epsilon somewhere. This is epsilon. This is my epsilon. So epsilon is less than 0.2. It has features. It's important, it just has features. So this is my epsilon.
So maybe I'm naive, so I thought that the tensors were h squared, whereas scalars were h squared over epsilon.
That's right. These are coefficients in the front. There are coefficients like 16, etc. Those coefficients. So they are comparable, actually. The contribution to CMB is comparable. They're just comparable. In terms of R, it would be 0.5. That's a huge number. So we're not saying the universe is like that. This is to say that if we apply a bottom-up approach and have no prejudice, allows ensemble of trajectories, Monte Carlo likes this universe. I have explanation why it technically can happen, but let me finish, then this will be my last paragraph, and I'll probably explain you why. So this is not saying, we're not saying that M squared phi squared inflation is not the best choice. It has non vanishing probability, it's fine. But if I'm choosing it statistically, then statistically the data prefer large gravity waves. And let me stress, it does not contradict to any data. Because when you heard about constraints on gravity waves from VMAP, it's all in the package that we are working with the power law assumption and we're not varying index. When BMAP is allowing to vary Rayleigh index, gravity waves are going up. But if you allow more variations, then there is much more room for gravity waves. This is non-triviality. Okay, I finished.